Hello, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and Steve Argue here, fresh out of jail after 7 months, and I'm in here today as guest VJ for Robert Norse, who had some other pressing activities, but he's going to be in here in a half hour, and then he's going to... Then I'll be back again to do more of the show. There's some pressing issues going on in terms of police repression that I want to talk about. I also want to talk about... I'm not sure how much Robert's going to go over some of this, so maybe in terms of Dolphin Lee and news on that, and the struggle going on around tenants trying to hold on to where they're living, racist comments I'm sure many people are aware of from Keith Sugar against the Mexican Americans down living in the Dolphin Lee apartments, and the struggle to continue to keep that low-income housing, and in terms of the political repression of Gary Graham, who's facing execution very soon. They've set the date for June 22nd. He's a longtime activist from death row, fighting against the death penalty. And some real shocking, outrageous anyway. I don't know if, I think we're becoming less and less shocked at the things this government has been doing to people, but some outrageous things done to him besides the fact that they're about to kill him, and the struggle to keep him alive. And the news in terms of what's going on with the safe sleeping zones, and so these are some things that I want to be going over and talking about, and also just talking a little bit about, I think, my experiences in jail, and with all this, I want people to be calling in, and the number here is 427-FRSC. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is free radio, open to free discussion, and feel free to call in anytime with questions, comments. I want to start out by talking about what just happened in terms of the police repression that I first talked about here locally with activist David Silva. Some outrageous things done to him Tuesday night at the city council meeting. He was arrested, or according to the police, he was not arrested. Even though they took him away in handcuffs and a pain compliance hold, and under the pretext of supposedly being concerned about his health, or concerned about his mental health, and this was definitely a political attack in the middle of discussion going on about what's happening with Dolphin Lee and the safe sleeping zones. And I've got a statement here where David Silva talks about this a bit, and he talks about how he was just waiting in line at the public comment period that goes on at these city council meetings, where you got 3 minutes to get up and talk, and it is a good time to air political issues, because it is televised, and some people catch it, and people catch it down there, and it's a good way to protest activities and get people down to use their own meetings, the government's own meetings, as a place to take on the government's repressive policies against the homeless and so forth. I see it in many ways as not just as the catchphrase has been going of speaking truth, not so much as speaking truth to authority, in the face of authority, without fear of them. But a big part of it, talking to the people, and that I think that's and not being afraid to tell the truth to the people, and that's part of building the kind of movement that creates big changes. Okay, I'm sorry. I want to get back to David Silva. This is some outrageous stuff. He was arrested, and he's on the pretext of, it says here, my threat, this is from David Silva, my threat was couched in the frame of, I've already fasted. See, they're saying that David Silva was threatening to burn himself up at the city council meeting. My threat was couched in the frame of, I've already fasted and was willing to die, and you betrayed our agreement. What's left for me to do? What's next? Do I have to self-immolate? That was Thursday evening, and he goes on, I scheduled a meeting with Keith Sugar at 2 p.m. on further developing the operational agreements for the constricted provisional safe zone. That's the safe zone, safe sleeping zone. Just before I went to the meeting, Celia Scott called me, having heard about this so-called threat. I explained how the promises were being broken to people who were on fast at the time, and especially Keith's failure to put it on the agenda when he had agreed that the zones, that's Mayor Keith Sugar, when he had agreed that zones would not open until operational, but there would be no delay on the vote. The city attorney had said when we came to the agreement, when I asked him in front of everyone, Tim, Catherine, Ken Cole, Steve Belcher, Wilson, if there was going to be any legal hang-ups, he said absolutely not. Keith, an environmental attorney, said there would be no legal hang-ups. 3 weeks later, Keith uses the excuse of a threatened lawsuit from an out-of-town corporation that has a plant here as why they could not vote until the CEQA mitigations were in place. This isn't David Silva, I'd butt in, you know, this is a continuation of, you know, long delays in this process of homeless people just having a safe place to sleep, even at the small level they're talking about with this plan. And David Silva continues, I said I was willing to compromise and they would just vote on the blanket ban since that would be going anyway citywide. He ignored that suggestion. The city attorney said that to divide the question on the second reading was not legal. Rachel O'Malley, Chris Crone's wife, talked to the city attorney of Santa Monica and confirmed Barisoni was wrong, as did the city attorney of Berkeley. The city attorney called me and yelled at me for quite some time for going behind his back. It all started to smell. At the 2 o'clock meeting, I put Celia's recommendation on the table to just vote on decriminalization of sleep. Gene Arner, the city's housing man, said that the provisional sleeping zones were starting to look like they'd be on the 1.5 to 2.5 months instead of 2 to 3 weeks. He had said at our meeting with the chief and Emily Riley and Pat Clark just 2 days prior. I also had heard several complaints from residents near the industrial area that the police were telling them that the entire camping ban had already been repealed and the police were under orders to not go after the campers in this area, even if they were doing drugs and publicly defecating and acting rowdy. And the chief had promised that this would not happen, and part of their scare tactics against the people, against the residents, So Dave Silva continues. This is all leading up to, you know, these are activities of David Silva in trying to get, you know, some justice for the homeless people here in Santa Cruz, and background as to why he was targeted by the city government through the police. And he continues, so we threw out the whole provisional safe zone and divided the question of the ballot decriminalization of sleep as one ordinance change and a separate measure for the safe sleeping zones, which is what I had asked for all along, but since it now came from Celia, and she had talked to Catherine about it, it was now understood, and we... actually, I'm not sure. One by one agreement to go this way. Michael Schmidt, the Chamber of Commerce, being the last holdout, except for Keith Sugar, who asked me if they did it this way, would I call off the fast and any further escalation along those lines? And David Silva answered, I said I would start eating immediately and will do no action at Tuesday's City Council. I came directly home and left a message for all the council members that I was quite well pleased that the citizens will finally vote in a clear democratic process. I also apologized that Friday afternoon for any fear I may have caused them, and that they had nothing to worry about. The people would decide. Some member of the city council chose to ignore this message and sick the police on me after I had been around the chambers. After I had been around the chambers, had passed the police officer to go talk to the New Sentinel reporter. It was then when I got up to stand in line after several people encouraged me to make some statements. I planned a "Can't we all just get along" statement, but when I got in line, Sergeant Henning asked me to come outside with him. I thought he needed some help with some situation. He turned me around and cuffed me and said, "You are not under arrest." This is what they did to David Silva. They turned him around, cuffed him. Officer Nick Richard, cuffed him and told him he was not under arrest. He called over a young officer, it was Sergeant Henning that did that, and then Nick Richards came over, who proceeded to abuse David Silva's wrists in an attempt to get him to fall on his knees, but he was able to maintain his balance, and he walked over to the police car. He used his thumb to push the cuffs downward against his wrists, and Claudia Schaefer came over, and that's the officer, came over and looked at what this cop was doing. Several people heard him say that he was just doing this paying compliance hold against David Silva, just out of habit, and that he understood that David Silva was extra sensitive, a very sarcastic remark from him. And 1.5 blocks away, a motorcycle cop pulled over and asked him if he needed help, and asked the cop that had him in custody, and David Silva's listening to this in custody, if he needed help, and this cop answered, no one cares about this one. He has no following, he is disposable. And the cop said he'd take care of it. Now, this had to have been a very worrisome situation for David Silva, knowing the type of brutality that these police are capable of. But I think I want to put out a very clear message that David Silva is not disposable, and the movement here will defend him from police repression, and we will not allow or tolerate this type of police repression, this type of intimidation that was carried out against him. David Silva was driven into the freeway, or they drove onto the freeway in 5 o'clock traffic, and it took them about 45 minutes. And in that time, David Silva was explaining to this cop that he was being used as a David Silva explained to the cop that he was being used as a political ploy. And by the time we got to Dominican, David Silva says that the cop believed him and was angry that he was being used for a political ploy and apologized for hurting him. But again, he repeated that the paying compliance hold used against David Silva, it was just done out of habit, the force excess of force for a person who was not resisting in any way. That this cop says it was just out of habit. This young officer, Nick Richards. Then Nick Richards told him that he didn't have to read him his rights because he wasn't under arrest, and no one ever said anything to David Silva about him being pulled in on a 5150. He saw that on the paperwork. He saw that on the paperwork later, but he was never advised of his rights. The interviewers at Dominican felt they were being used politically as well at Dominican Hospital where he was taken, and he told them that it was his opinion that Hernandez was involved in this. Hernandez, a city council member, one of the people involved in being the bosses of the police. And David Silva's opinion that Hernandez was responsible for this. And another strange thing, he said when he arrived at Dominican Hospital for this 5150 interview, there was an envelope waiting at Dominican with photos of David Silva at the Safe Sleeping Zone concert from the previous weekend. From the previous weekend. And something David Silva characterized as very Kafkaesque. So I was outraged by this. I'm sorry, it kind of took a bit going through the entire statement here. I think this is a very serious situation when these police can be so arrogant as to take a prominent political activist like David Silva, arrest him, and call it not an arrest, use excessive force in front of a large number of other people, and explain that excessive force as being just out of habit, and take him for a psychiatric evaluation, where there was no reason, no real pretext, except for the fact that that the police want to intimidate people from standing up for our rights here, and that shows part of this government's fear of the people, government by and for the rich and the wealthy and the not for the majority of us. So, but it's very important that we stand up. That people not tolerate these things, not be fearful in the face of this, because that's what they want. We can stand up against the system. We can make a difference. That's part of why they do target us. That's why they target us for these type of operations. And you know, we should know that political activity does work. They do fear us. Otherwise, they really would ignore us. A lot of times they say, oh, we don't care what you do. I was told that many times in jail. Well, we don't care about your political activities. No. Well, that's why they did all these things, interfering with my ability to communicate with the outside world, to interfere with they interfered with my mail, with me getting a lot of political newspapers, but then the claim was, no, we don't care about any of that. Sort of like Richard Nixon during the anti-Vietnam War protests, claiming that he didn't care about the anti-Vietnam War protests at all, that they weren't having any impact, and he was saying that all the time. And that was for the consumption of people who were opposed to the war in a big way, for them to feel demoralized, like it wasn't having an impact. But meanwhile, the FBI had all kinds of operations working within that movement to disrupt it, try to destroy it, carried out all kinds of activities under the presidency of Richard Nixon, which showed very much that they did care about those activities, did all kinds of things to prevent the free speech and freedom of association and the people standing up against an unjust war happening against the Vietnamese people and those who were drafted to send over there. And we have locally some of the same tactics. You know, it is frustrating, you know, to see but then you look at what happened with the May 22nd demonstration and what was done to nonviolent anti-war protesters, a woman with a child, and the pain compliance hold she was put in, her screams of pain, child screaming in terror, and the intervention I did in getting that cop, Officer Lefebvre, off of him, that and what was then carried out against me in the 7 months I just did in jail, that was very much something that I think they grew to wish they didn't do, because it did so much to expose to many more people what their system is about, that their system is this is not a democracy we live under, and that the police, the role of the police is a repressive role, often, and they often have no respect for human rights, for the Constitution, and that this is what took place, to the point where they felt they needed to drop Officer Lefebvre, that they needed to drop him as a result of all the bad publicity they were getting, all the bad publicity that the police department and the system got as a result of what was done there. Soon after the investigation, the independent investigation by the Citizens Police Review Board was turned in, Lefebvre was dropped from the force, and this is what we were told would happen, that the city council would go by the report, and soon after the report, city council member Christopher Crone informed activist Robert Norris that Officer Lefebvre was no longer on the force. Robert Norris is here, and he's got some things he's going to go over. I definitely want to get on the question of Shaka Sankofa, also known as Gary Graham, after he goes over a number of things he's come in to talk about. And well, it's good to be out. I just want to say that it's definitely good to be out, and I am feeling a little overwhelmed right now, a bit tired, and the sun and so forth, and walking around and everything. It's very nice to see everybody and all the support that I've been giving. I want to thank people for all the hugs, for all the warmth that I've gotten from people since I got out of jail yesterday. And I do have to say I guess I am a little bit tired right now, so
take a breather.
So I should take a breather, and I want to thank everybody for all the support that I've got while I was in jail, the money that was put on my books, people visiting, organizing, people coming out, demanding better conditions when I was beaten by CO Zamora, so-called correctional officer Zamora. All these things made a big difference. Fighting for our ability for lower price stamps and envelopes and for our pens. All of these things succeeded. We got our pens back. We got lower price stamps. We got lower priced envelopes, and that was partly through things we did on free radio. And are you ready to go? Or?
Sure.
Okay. And I'll probably be getting back with you in about a half hour here. And you're listening to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'll turn you over to Robert.
Hey. Wow. Well, that's
That's just the talk show host I would like to have on my show here. One day out of jail, or a day and a half out of jail, and a little out of breath, but certainly probably saner and more sensible than 95% of the city. I was listening to your show, or your guesting of my show, Steve, earlier, and I was hearing your reading of the commentary by David Silva, which I thought was very interesting. I know I got the same commentary you did. We had a meeting with David this morning, kind of getting together around the sleeping band and also the Residente Unido situation. But I thought it was very well done, and I thought also that you kind of put it very, very well. I think you had some kind of commentary and clarification mixed in there. I would interview you about your jail situation, but I'm going to give you a breather because I think you are tired and need a little opportunity to sit back there. I'm going to do my usual paper shuffle here, which I do when I come in trying to get stuff together. While I do, however, I'm going to play a tape, which I've been meaning to play for some time. And if anybody wants to call in to talk to Steve Argue, ask him, well, give him a breather for a while, but ask questions about subject matters raised, I will kind of field for Steve while he takes a breather. The studio's kind of hot this evening. We didn't get the 96-degree temperatures of yesterday. I understand it was like 105 or something, 106 up in Boulder Creek. It was some absurd temperature up there. And, of course, in Santa Cruz, it was horribly hot. Looks like an incoming call. I'm going to do a little fielding here, where I'll do a little talking about some of the issues that I normally talk about on the station, where you're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the phone number is 427-3772.
You know, Robert, I think you ought to tell the radio audience, you know, a good analysis of what happened with Lee Dolphin and what the consul did that night and where you think we ought to go. Because I went out of there really feeling very confused on what they did.
Well, I can do that either on the air, or I can do that on the phone, or
on both. The air, I'd like you to do it.
Sounds good. And you, Bernard, of course, are a mainstay of this effort. I continue to say that, and part of it sounds like schmoozing, but I think, you know, you've been rounding up hundreds, literally hundreds of signatures of people on the street asking that the people of the Dolphin and Lee apartments in the Beach Flats area not be turned out of their homes, which is, of course, the Redevelopment Agency's latest brainstorm, compliments of Catherine Byers and the council majority, and that was what came up on Tuesday night. I guess I will, I'll talk about that now if you'd like.
Thank you. I'm going to hang up.
Sure.
Bye.
So, yeah, actually, I have many hours of tape of the Redevelopment Agency meeting. Redevelopment Agency is a group charged with sort of large projects involving low-income housing, redevelopment in the city. I became interested in it only recently, in the last year or two. Kind of Scott Graham, local council activist, turned me on to it and made me aware of what was going on. Of course, around the beach south of Laurel plan, which a Canfield to develop the city to death plan, which was turned back by voters and even became the basis. Yeah, Scott Graham is actually in the studio. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Robert.
Let's get your mic set up here. Is that how's that looking? The wilted mic there looks kind of like a sort of a half-erect phallus.
Well, it's better than the mic stands they have at city council nowadays.
Oh, that thing. Yeah, that's you have to hold your mic in your hand. It's like you're, you know, one of those urinals or something. Perhaps that's what they mean to, well, let's not get scatological here. With me now in the studio, as well as Steve Argue, a political prisoner who's finally been released, we have Scott Graham, political prisoner who's yet to be jailed. I see you're eating a burrito there. I assume that's a vegetarian burrito.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, Bernard asked Scott what happened at city council. And I was going to say, well, what happened was that the tenants came in record numbers from Residente Unidos, and they spoke up about they didn't want to lose their homes, that they did favor a project, but not the project the way it was going from the city's perspective, that they wanted guarantees that if their homes were destroyed, that they would actually have homes to come back to, and that they would have places to live while the building was being built. All things that the mayor and the Mercy Charities Housing, the group that's running the show, both in terms of the development and the ultimate management of the property and the building of the project, they all assured the residents that this is fine. There are guarantees in order. Mayor Sugar said the same thing. But of course, for months, you and I and others have pointed out that you can't really, the guarantees are very shaky, and what they came to council for primarily, and they also instructed Fitzmaurice and Hernandez, two council members on the Relocation Advisory Committee, to come back and ask the same thing, looking for real guarantees that could be written into law in an ironclad way so that they wouldn't lose their homes or the opportunity to get the equivalent in the so-called free market. That was, I think, the high point was that the residents came themselves and began to speak about that. And of course, the low point was the way the city council responded to it and how they handled the whole thing. I noticed from the very beginning, I just listened to the tape again today, part of it, that the redevelopment agency usually starts at 5 o'clock, and it has an oral communication session or public comment period all of its own, right? Just like at the 7 o'clock period where many folks who are listening are familiar, you can come and speak for 3 minutes on any subject not on the evening's agenda. So at the redevelopment agency at 5, you can do the same. And Keith Sugar began by stating that there was a blacklist of people who would not be allowed to speak because they had spoken the week before. Now, this may sound vaguely familiar to you because it's generally the practice that if there have been speakers the week before, they are put at the end of the line. But I have never before heard people barred from speaking. And those are the words he said. These people will not be allowed to speak during the public comment period. He also did not make that translation in Spanish, and I don't think that the Spanish translations were set up. So, in effect, all members of the Dolphin League who wanted to talk on other subjects of any sort, let's say life in the beach flats generally, their concerns about the relocation agency's treatment of other low-income people, the city's difficulties in dealing with problems in their area, they were denied that opportunity because that information was not given to them in Spanish. I am not entirely positive of this, but I didn't see that the translation material had been set up. What did you notice, Scott?
The translator was having a real difficult time that night, and she was actually had to rush up to the front of the council and tell them that she wasn't ready to start going, and that they had to give her a minute to get all set up because they were about to start the meeting before she was really set up to translate for people, and they're having problems with some of the equipment.
Also,
so she had to tell them, you know, wait a minute, wait till I'm ready. I'll give you a signal when I'm ready.
I know also that this is really the first time they've really had these kinds of translation facilities where they had a translator, and they also have a kind of a set of radio phones where the translator speaks into the mic very quickly from English to Spanish, telling the Spanish-speaking people what the English side of it is happening, and just as the translator tells to the council loudly and audibly for the entire audience from Spanish to English what the people who are speaking Spanish at the mic say. But in past meetings, and there have been at least the last half dozen meetings have had some people speaking in Spanish, maybe the last three or four, let's be very specific. They've had no translator available except the kind of informal services of Martin, the assistant city manager, and often the translating was done by either Nina Ruiz, the representative of Residente Unidos, or her mother, Julie Costanza Gomez, is also the manager of the Lee Apartments. And so materials were not prepared in Spanish. I noticed for this agenda, the rest of the agenda was not in Spanish, just the redevelopment agency section. So if the folks were concerned about the sleeping ban or the lack of the sleeping ban in this case, there was nothing in Spanish. There was nothing in Spanish on May 23rd when the first reading of the sleeping ban came up, as far as I know.
Well, there was nothing in Spanish on the other part of the redevelopment agenda, too, which was the money for Mercy Housing, which directly affects these folks.
Although that item was, I guess, pulled from the agenda?
Right, but it was still in the agenda packet. It was still there, the information item on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they should have done it in Spanish, too, and had it there.
So the point is, I think that one has to assume there's general contempt and disregard, let's say disregard at least, if not contempt, for the Spanish-speaking population until they make so loud a noise that they have to be noticed. And, of course, that's what's happening, I guess, around this, to me, kind of, you know, sensationalistic issue of the mayor's stupid comments about filthy, squalid conditions there and living like sardines, and if you want to live like this, you can go to Mexico, but we don't live like this here. Comments very ill-advised and very expressive, I think, of the kind of, frankly, bullying qualities that are the worst aspects of Mayor Sugar. He also has some better aspects, which did come out at the meeting as well. But they become the focus. And indeed, to some extent, they have to become the focus for people trying to challenge this whole situation because the media doesn't pay attention to the substantive issues. For example, tonight at 6 o'clock, Channel 8 is going to be doing is going to run the scan tape where Mayor Sugar made those comments about the Dolphin League tenants and said that, you know, they were living in squalor. If they preferred to live in filth, that's just fine. We'll leave you alone. But, you know, if you want to live packed in like sardines, that's fine. Kind of a contemptuous dismissal of serious concerns by tenants who were coming forward and saying, we want affordable housing, but we want affordable housing in a way that involves our participation, in a way that makes sure that every single individual who gets dislocated is going to get back in a way that people are not denied access because of their credit histories, because of their so-called criminal histories, because of their income levels, because some of those folks living in there are single men who are making perhaps enough money to conceivably not be considered low income, but they send two-thirds of their money back to their families in Mexico, and they let themselves live in what some of us might consider poverty conditions because they feel that this is that they're essentially enriching the lives of those who aren't there, the folks
right.
down south. And they would be excluded by the income conditions. And all these issues are very real, meaningful, serious issues. Sugar dismissed them all at the SCAN meeting as rancor from the landlord and the rancor from Nena Ruiz, who he kind of associated with the landlord. Indeed, she is the daughter of the landlord's daughter, but she claims to have no special status. She's not a manager there. She is simply a tenant who rents. Whatever the situation, the issues she's raising, I think, are important ones. But getting back to the council meeting, because that's what the caller, Bernard Klitzner, asked about. What happened at council meeting, I saw a number of things, but of course the outcome was put it off for 2 weeks, one. Two, Mercy Charities is a great group, we love you. And three, we would like to negotiate with the owners of the property, Vernon Lee, or the property, Vernon Lee, in order to get access to the property to find out how many people are there, no doubt so we can get a replacement housing plan and get everybody out of there real fast, an eminent domain, the property perhaps, if Lee won't sell. Those are the three things that happened, the ultimate actual actions by the council. Am I missing something here?
Well, there was actually only two things they made motions on. One was to negotiate with the owners of the property and to gain access to do building inspections. And the second thing was to reconfirm their commitment to Mercy Charities and that they would not exclude Mercy from any considerations.
It's ironic, though. They were reconfirming it at the same time as it was pulled from the agenda. So there must be a sense in which they weren't entirely clear that they wanted to shell out another $60,000 to Mercy Charities Housing, which, you know, we have been told, I've been told by writer Becky Johnson, that Mercy Charities pays its bureaucrats like an twice as much administrative salary as private owners, private managers of property, that they're, you know, and maybe that's justified, maybe it's not. I think that and of course the reason I mentioned that it was delayed 2 weeks because that was not in the resolution explicitly, but that was really, I think, the subtext. I mean, they were saying that's what we're going to do. We're going to put all these issues. Do we acquire the property? There were four options they were supposed to be considering. One of the options was to purchase. Can you run through the four options for me, Scott?
Well, the first option was what Seal Cirillo, the head of the redevelopment department, was pushing, which was ignore the tenants, just approve the current current replacement housing plan, and then just continue on with the project. You know, give Mercy the money and continue on with the project as if the tenants weren't even there. The second option was to try to meet the tenants' demands, or as many of the demands as the redevelopment agency was able to meet legally, because she said there were some demands that the redevelopment agency legally would not be able to meet. They were outside their purview. She didn't list what those were, though. The third option, which was the option that Keith Sugar was pushing, was to buy the property, land bank it, which in other words means they're not buying it specifically for this project. So they don't need a replacement housing plan to buy it then, because they're going to put it into a land bank and whatever that means. But anyway, and then start a new planning process that involves the residents in an active way sort of an equal partnership with the redevelopment agency and come up with a plan that both of them could live with. And the fourth option was to abandon the process altogether and go look somewhere else in town to build a low-income housing project.
There also was a fifth option, of course, that was presented by the tenants, more kind of like a kind of a revamped third option, right?
Yeah, more or less, except they really don't want the city to buy the property right away. There, many of them seem to have a lot of fear of that happening.
Yeah, we got the translation of the fifth option, which was in English, and it was translated into Spanish today, in detail for, I guess, the Residentes Unidos meeting tomorrow. Their option, which I think is an important one, of course, received absolutely no consideration whatsoever from the city council, even though they had received it twice, once at the 11 o'clock litigation session when some of us spoke there. Nena Ruiz spoke there. I spoke there. Bernard Klitzner. I guess it wasn't Bernard Klitzner. It was P.J.
Grube,
who's the land trust devotee or advocate, who also came from the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee, rushed over there to essentially tell City Council, hold it, you guys are violating the whole idea of our SCAN position, which is to set up a forum in July to get the tenants together. And indeed, SCAN members will be down tomorrow night at the Residente Unidos meeting in the Beach Flats trying to begin that process of getting the forum together. But is all this kind of too late? It looks like the council is hell-bent on some action in 2 weeks. What do you think, Scott?
Well, it depends on what or how honest Ciel Cirillo is with her negotiations.
Well, then we're doomed. I mean,
right, yeah. I mean, it's like, if she comes back to the council and says, well, Vernon Lee, we might have to do the same thing to him we did to David Silva. And
you have him committed for a couple hours?
Yeah, and get him to sign the papers while he's in the hospital, signing over his buildings and property to the city.
There's a couple of bars to the city's proceeding. I mean, first of all, isn't it true that, of course, that the tenant majority has already said, they set up this, you know, rather, I felt, irrelevant, powerless, stacked committee called the Relocation Advisory Committee. It wasn't a project area committee that would have actually been voted by people in the area, which would have had somewhat more powers, not as much powers as folks had hoped, but more power. And it is mandated by law in low-income projects that affect the large areas in the community, as I understand.
Right, wherever there's going to be displacement of large numbers of low-income people.
But they didn't do that. They set up this project advisory committee, this relocation advisory committee. They had it rushing right forward with a couple of shills for the city. Yolanda, what's her name?
Yolanda Goda.
Yeah, La Familia Center's. Roll right ahead, ignore a comment from the audience, and let's get this plan, let's get Ciel Cirillo's plan passed fast, as sort of the subtext to what she was doing. But of course, she got overruled because the tenants got wise as to what was going on, and the tenants had a majority on the council, and even the most vociferous pro-project tenant, Juan Hernandez, eventually came right around and said he didn't want any project going forward without guarantees. And so 2 weeks ago, this committee instructed Hernandez and Fitzmaurice, also on the committee, to go back to City Council, get specific guarantees for relocation and for reentry, because, one, they wanted to be guaranteed that they were going to be paid not just $5,400, but however much money was required in this incredibly inflated housing market during the year or two or three that they had to stay waiting for this project to get built and other housing, and then get back into it, not stopped by credit checks from Mercy Housing or income eligibility requirements or past felony histories or unlawful detainer histories. They wanted not just a statement of principle from the resolution agency, from the redevelopment agency, they wanted the redevelopment agency to affirm that they would fill out a contract with every single member, person currently living in the Dolphin and Lee. And of course, none of that happened. None of that was really discussed at all at the meeting. The words guarantees were kind of thrown around, particularly by Keith Sugar, who had his own proposal, and he came to the tenants in two meetings on Friday and on Monday. We have an incoming caller. Let's see if that caller can get me away from the mic here.
I doubt it.
Hi, you're on free radio.
I'm on free radio?
Yes, sir.
Oh, gee, gosh. Hi, this is David Silva.
This is the David Silva that couldn't speak on the Dolphin Lee Project.
For some strange reason, I was considered too sane to speak on the Dolphin Lee
Project.
Well,
maybe you can say now what you would have said at that meeting, dear.
Well, actually, I was all ready to make my, you know, usual can't we all get along speech and try to make sure that people knew that there was a, you know, that the SCAN approach was to have a community forum to try to build consensus, to try to include the residents and try to get the citizens of Santa Cruz to understand the residents' story and give an opportunity for them to hear that. And that was the approach. So for that to have blown up, it was, you know, kind of bizarre. So I was trying to, like, reiterate that was our purpose and not to take such a front. I'm here, however, on the phone calling people to let them know that I'm going to be debating the sleeping ban on public access TV. That is now no longer 72, but it is 27.
Uh-huh.
Channel 27.
And what night will that be?
That's tonight. And it's going to be at 7:30. You're probably cutting into your show. But I've been a bouncer before. I've bounced from your show to the public access back and forth.
Well, I resent that. Who are you debating?
Well, I understand I'm debating the representative of the Harvey West Area Association.
Oh, dear.
And also, who may not come, Hubbard. And also Keith Sugar and who else? Myself. I'll be debating myself. And a substitute guest we're not sure of.
And a substitute. This is the Charlie Phillips show, The Voices from the Village.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give a phone number. People can call into Channel 27.
425-8844
for the Voices from the Village show starting at 7:30. Goes runs to 8:30, as I understand it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe if you can get a tape of that, we can actually play some of it on free radio later.
I'll see what I can do. I have friends in low places.
Indeed. I've heard of those friends. What's his name? You're debating one of them tonight, that foul-mouthed mayor. You got to watch out with him, man.
Well, you know, I guess we both have tempers.
Indeed.
And the
difference,
you know,
is he has power. I
would hope that he'd understand my having a temper, since he certainly has displayed his.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope he's not going to resent my temper, especially since I've always been quick to apologize. I apologized within, you know, less than 12 hours for my outburst last Thursday, and every single council member got that message, and Catherine Byers has saved the tape of that apology for any mm-hmm. future actions.
We still don't know who blew the whistle on you and hauled you off.
Still don't know that yet. We have a. I will probably be finding out tomorrow morning around 8:30.
Is that man or woman going to make a full confession?
That man or woman is going to make more than a full confession. I expect a front page apology.
Uh-huh.
Or a back page apology, yeah.
Some kind of an apology.
Some kind of an apology, yeah.
Well, this sounds very interesting. Perhaps, so you're going to get Keith Sugar to actually push for real sleeping ban action immediately instead of waiting until November?
Well, that's what I always call for the city council to act on their conscience, and I've called for the powers that be to release them to act on the conviction of their conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the proper thing to do is, of course, to vote for the council that we elected to vote to repeal the sleeping ban. It's a human rights violation. It's nothing that shouldn't even have to go before the voters. That's just all we could get without dying. But others died. 19 people. We had 19 people on full fast. We had 19 homeless people that died last year unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question, of course, is where do we go from here?
Well, there's a campaign in the sleeping ban meeting Wednesday. We've pretty much tentatively said that it's going to be 5:30. We just lost the cab meeting room, so we haven't got a meeting place yet, but call 425-4499. As soon as the Medea Benjamin's event's over, we'll have the details on there
mm-hmm.
for people where they can come. And it's going to be focusing now. We're shifting from fasting and so forth. We're shifting to actually having the last 5 weeks of our petition drive register a large number of signatures.
Well,
so
I would suggest that people immediately call City Council at
420-5017.
Exactly so, and tell this mayor, who has been promising so much and delivering so little, that it's time for, I guess it's not just the mayor, it's Catherine Byers, the shadow mayor.
Well,
and
know,
she also
I
needs to
think,
be called
I think
to account.
People really ought to realize that we have, in Mike Rodkin, a super shadow mayor of the very dark side,
mm-hmm.
and in Michael Hernandez, a under shadow mayor of the very slimy side, who together with Mike Vasquez released a press release to San Francisco, telling everyone that the camping ban has been repealed and that everybody will be allowed to sleep just everywhere.
Vasquez
and
is
come to Santa Cruz, and so they're the ones that said come to Santa Cruz. So the fact that now this morning a whole bunch of couches were laid out and all the the open spaces out on the west side by somebody is very, very suspicious. There's a lot of suspicious stuff going on, and if you were at the city council meeting, you heard West Side resident and Harvey West resident after resident saying that the police were telling them that the camping ban has been repealed, that there were to be no enforcement of drug laws, no enforcement of fecal matter laws, no enforcement of sanitation laws, no enforcement at all. And if that's what the police are telling somebody, that means the police are, again, as I've always said, a political party in this town, and that needs to be corrected because it's against the Constitution, and that is the real problem that this issue has always faced, and that's what we have to address. Probably, I think, we need the resignation of the chief of police immediately.
No probably about it there, David, and I, again, expect people, I hope you guys will tune in to Channel 27 and call in to, you know, add a line or two of sense to the, probably the nonsense text, but I also think we really have to start mobilizing for real protests fast, and I think that, you know, simply waiting in hopes of an electoral activity is no good.
Compassion to understand what the residents are facing when they're getting this disinformation from the police department.
Oh, sure.
You know, have compassion for the residents. It's, I mean, they are being used in a very, very very foul way by a political party called the Police Department of Santa Cruz.
Right. Well, I mean, I was talking to them at great length the other night, and I think what we really need to do is turn out information for homeless people that tells them, you know, people are going to be sleeping illegally. They're going to continue sleeping, 700 to 1,500 of them illegally, and they're going to be sleeping probably in these zones because people have been, you know, nudged into these zones, told that these are places to go.
That's what the press release that was sent to San Francisco.
Sure. Even though they're not, there's been no second reading. Even though there's not likely to be any second reading. Apparently, I was kind of initially dismayed when I heard that, you know, that you and others had sort of abandoned this, and I think to some extent with good reason. I understand you had this, you know, blockade in the road, the incredible shrinking safe zones, you know.
The industrial zones shrink to a third of what we were originally.
But I think what we now need to do is hit the streets again and say, look, we have seen how all our patience and all our negotiating skills have produced. Essentially, we need now to show them that there is a real determination. We'll set up our own campground right here at City Hall if we need to.
Okay. Let us always keep clear, though, the difference between the overnight survival sleeping and campgrounds, because there still will be the issue of campgrounds in the future. But we do need to secure the human rights for overnight survival sleeping. So, you know, when you do the campground kind of activities, try to distinguish it somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. Please, Robert.
Okay.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, David is right about those distinctions, but, of course, they're pretty meaningless for two-thirds of the people for whom survival sleeping, even under the existing so-called partial sleeping ban repeal, which might come into force if we can ever get it back to city council, that particular law provides for people the opportunity to sleep on a patch of sidewalk in the two industrial zones if they don't get sued by, I guess there's a claim that there's a liability problem, and that's the latest delay and deny approach by the city on this whole issue. So, I mean, it seems to me that you can get lost in these details, you know. I mean, if you sit around worrying about the details, you get lost in them, and I think that to some extent is what the negotiators have gotten into. And David Silva, of course, is, you know, a negotiator par excellence. I mean, he salvaged a little bit of something from the debacle last year when Catherine Byers ruled after the whole task force to examine the camping ordinance dog and pony show went through 3 months, winter of 1998-99, he got them to eliminate a misdemeanor provision. He got them to make it lower the fine to $54. There, I mean, some small things, but the amount of energy expended to get these tiny things, I think. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's really, maybe it's important for us to stay on the main issue. Scott, is the problem that we're just not tidy enough as campers? What's the answer here?
Well, that's what everyone points to all the time. I mean, if there's any discussion, debate about a campground, there's any debate about, you know, where people could legally camp in their cars or anything like that, it's always the worst members of the homeless population are pointed out and said, see what they do, see how they act, you know, they've ruined this little patch of woods here, they've left garbage all over this street there, and the people that are actually taking care of themselves or taking care of their scene, no one even knows they've been around, so they can't point to them and say, oh, well, look at those guys, because no one sees them. So the only people they actually see or see evidence of are the slobs.
Of course, that's not strictly true, because often you also see evidence of people who are new, people who don't really know the ropes. They come into town, they sleep in their vehicle, they don't dump a lot of trash, but they get hassled.
Right.
You know, and it's not because of their bad campers, but because they're obvious campers, or they're, you know, or the police are doing rounds or whatever. And of course, there are some really grotesque cases of people who are losing their vehicles because of difficult circumstances. A woman out at the Homeless Garden Project, a man called to me from last week about how his vehicle was taken by police. There are also other circumstances involved, not just the sleeping ban, but the mentality here is, I think, an underlying prejudiced and bigoted one against people of a certain appearance, a certain lifestyle, a certain income level. I mean, you know, a certain... to claim that this catchphrase, homeless by choice, for instance, I regard as pretty bogus. It's true that during a period of time of our lives, some middle-class people, you know, choose to do some traveling around. They go from hostel to hostel, and, you know, they hit the streets, they do some camping, and usually that's for a limited period of time. But I'd say 90% of people who are homeless are there because of economic problems, because of other problems in their lives, and they prefer not to be. What's your sense on that?
Well, I'd say that, you know, the percentage of people that are homeless by choice is very small when you consider the estimated homeless population here. I mean, it's probably it's well under 10% here in Santa Cruz, which I think has a really high level of homeless by choice people, but it's still under 10%. And I think that a majority of the people, just like you said, are either for economic reasons or medical reasons or other reasons, you know, whether it's alcohol addiction, drug addiction, you know, mental health issues. There's just endless number of issues that create homelessness. And it's really society at large. We live in this disposable society, and people have become disposable. It's like, well, if this person isn't being a useful member of society, then we won't even take care of them, or we won't even care about bringing them back into the regular mainstream society. We'll just let go of them. They're disposable.
And moreover, even if they can take care of themselves, we'll lay barriers in their path, because the very idea that there are people like this in our neighborhoods makes us uncomfortable, so we just don't want to even have any sense that they're around at all.
Right, yeah, just a total chlorination of the sidewalks, I guess you could say.
Right, it's what Jerry Henry calls a kind of social cleansing.
Right.
Jerry Henry, of course, is the man who was on our show last week. He already went to his pretrial conference. He faces 10 years in jail for a series of essentially... he's a street minister to young people, but he also has worked with Feed the People, which serves poor people, young folks out at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. And when he challenged abusive behavior by police, he became targeted by authorities out there and now goes to trial on Monday morning at 9 a.m. in Department 2.
You're on free radio.
Hey, that's Scott Kennedy. You got in there?
Sorry?
Who you got in there?
Our guests are Scott Graham, Steve Argue, and, of course, the ever-popular Robert Norse.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'd like to say hi to Steve.
Well, he's here. He hears you.
Yeah, hey, hi, Steve. Hey, listen, Robert.
Yes.
The reason I'm calling is because Scott just said that, you know, it's like we have a disposable society. Everybody's disposable?
Yes.
No. They're not disposing of them and thinking like they don't exist. They're locking them up.
Right, well,
It's not a disposable society. It's a police society.
Well, it's a little of this and a little of that, and I know that, you know, I read today in the paper that the Capitola trailer...